What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Welcome to the first episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast.
Thanks for joining us for what is the inaugural episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm very happy to have as a guest on this inaugural episode Stanley Weotter. If you have been any type of serious fan of horror fiction or horror movies in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, then you most likely have heard the name Stanley Weotter. He has written many nonfiction books about the horror field, both horror fiction, horror movies, also the book called Comic Book Rebels. Why don't we just jump into it? How's it going, Stanley?
It's going fine, Jeff. Thanks for giving me the call.
Good, good. So probably if someone has heard of Stanley Weotter, they've probably heard of what some people consider maybe the kind of seminal book of interviews with horror writers, which is called Dark Dreamers. That was later turned into a TV series, correct?
Right. Also, it became a book of photographs along the way.
Book of photographs?
The book of photographs was called Dark Dreamers Facing the Masses of Fear. And that's where we, my photographer, collaborator, and I went around and spent about 5 years going to different conventions and conferences and photographing the top horror people in the business, whether it was artist, author, actor, filmmaker. We have about 100 people in that book, and that book pretty much inspired me to go see if I could get a television series out of it, which ultimately I did.
How did the television show come about exactly? Obviously, you know, as we know, you know, there were a series of interviews both in magazines and the book that we mentioned earlier, Dark Dreamers, and then also Dark Visions, Conversations with the Masters of Horror Film. How did you go from there to doing a TV series, if you could kind of explain that progression?
Certainly. It came about simply by being a member of the Horror Writers Association and basically a Canadian documentary and producer wanted to make a feature-length documentary about horror and pop culture. And he had read my books, and he was a member of the Horror Writers Association. So he looked me up through them, and we got to talking, and he asked me if I'd be interested in conducting interviews for his feature-length documentary. And I said, well, that's a great idea, but I said, I think I've got one idea better. And I said, why don't we do a weekly television show, a half hour in length, and then if eventually we could take whatever we wanted, used or unused from that TV series, and put it into a feature length documentary. So that's how Dark Dreamer started back in year 2000.
Where did it air? Was it Canada?
It was in Canada. It was produced by a Canadian company up in Toronto and aired nationwide in Canada. And then 5 years later aired in Great Britain and Ireland, Scotland. Basically, was a satellite feed to all of Great Britain. And the odd thing, of course, was that people say, why wasn't shown in America? And I say it's not for lack of trying. The company did its utmost to sell the series Dark Dreamers in America. And at that point, there was really nothing, feasibly close to a horror channel or the Chiller channel or Stealth TV. And so we basically couldn't find a home for it. Now I'm happy to say that after several years of being dormant, it's going to be released in January of 2009 as a deluxe set DVD.
And where will those DVDs be available?
Everywhere. Being hooked up with the largest realtor of DVD, or I should say distributor of DVD. So it'll be available online and also, I would assume at your Target and Walmart.
Sure. And probably online as well, as usual.
Yes, definitely online at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
So we know about your books, Interviews with Horror Writers, Dark Dreamers, and then also Dark Visions, Conversations with the Masters of the Horror Film. And then also, as you just explained, the Dark Dreamers DVD, which will be coming up in January 2009. I wonder if we could go back a minute and talk about kind of how you initially got interested in horror, and if there were any kind of, I'm just wondering kind of what your earliest memory or any formative experiences that hooked you and solidified your interest in horror?
Certainly. It basically began with comic books. I think that's not unusual. Back in the late 50s, people may find it hard to believe, but there was only three channels on most televisions, and televisions were black and white, and you got one channel for ABC, one for NBC, and one for CBS, and this is even before PBS, never mind the cable. But what I'm bringing that up for is to say that there wasn't like people are now watching television or watching some kind of computer to get their enjoyment. You basically had literature, books, or you had what I consider a prelude to literature, comic books. So I was like most kids my age, comic books were 10 cents or 12 cents at the time. And for whatever reasons, I was trying to cheat, I guess, on reading the classics, such as Journey to the Center of the Earth and, War of the Worlds, that type of thing, which eventually at the ripe old age of, I think, 11 or 12, I actually read the books. But this all goes back to saying, well, what did I read before the books? I actually read the comic book adaptation of the classics. So I was reading books published by a company called Classics Illustrated. And for them, I was reading War of the Worlds, Journey to the Center of the Earth, and Frankenstein was one of the ones that I purchased for 12 cents. Now, from there, I progressed a little bit further to going to the magazine shop and saying, well, maybe there's some scary books because these scary comic books are excellent. They gave me a thrill. And there I found a copy of Dracula. I think it sold for 50 or 60 cents, a Dell paperback. I grabbed it, went home, probably sat down to read it. And my mother had a fit and thought it was the worst thing she could, catch me reading as a horror novel. She promptly destroyed it. And I waited to strike. And then by that, I mean, I waited till she was gone, out for the day. And I went into her purse and found the 50 cents that I needed and rode on my bike, back to the magazine shop in Northampton, Mass, and promptly bought another copy of Dracula. But this time I read it under the covers in the dark of night, which is probably the better experience for me that I did do it under that circumstance.
And so you said that was in Northampton. It was a magazine store?
Yes, it's no longer there. It was called Augie's, and you could buy anything you want as long as you had the money. You could buy. I bought my first graphic novel there. Bought my first issue of Famous Monsters of Filmland there. Bought my first copy of Playboy there. I was kind of a regular, so they figured I was just some kind of a bookworm, so it didn't matter what I bought. As long as I had 35 cents or 50 cents to buy a book or a magazine, I was given really complete freedom to buy what I want versus the town library in Hadley, the next town over where I grew up. The librarians pretty much restricted you to what age level they thought was appropriate for you to read a certain book, and this is why I meant it took a while before I got the books to read books like Journey to Defend the Earth and War of the Worlds, because they thought at the ripe old age of 10 I just wasn't ready for these books.
Right, right. And you went from Dracula to what were some of your, you know, your next books?
Very, luckily in school, and this was the odd thing too about it growing up, this is in the 60s now, there was a Scholastic Book Club. So every month you could choose as many or as few books as you wanted, and they were sold, they were paperbacks sold at a discount. So you could get the Collected Tales of Edgar Allan Poe for like 30 cents, and you could get Selected Stories of H.P. Lovecraft for like 50 cents. And it was a great, great deal for everyone involved because the school was sent these flyers, and for whatever reason, they always put in one or two mystery, horror, science fiction titles. So that's where I really got into reading horror, and it was in a way condoned by the school system itself, because if it was included in the Scholastic Book catalog, it must have been, you know, literature or something close to it.
Exactly. So that's how your interest in horror literature developed. But I also know that you are very much a horror movie fan and also, you know, very knowledgeable about, you know, horror movies and the entire genre. I wondered if you could talk about your initial experiences watching horror movies. What were some that you first saw? And I wonder if you watched some of those at a drive-in theater or what the movie theater was like. I'm sure it wasn't a multiplex.
No, not at all. It was a single screen. One of them is still there. The Calvin Theater in Northampton is still there, though they don't show films anymore. And the Academy of Music is still there, though I don't believe they're showing movies anymore. But those were, I went with my two older sisters, partially because it was the easiest thing for my parents to get rid of us on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. And they simply dropped us off. That's when a movie was 50 cents. And they could give us another 50 cents for candy and soda. And we were all set for the afternoon. But we would see double features. And every week we would just go to it no matter what. It could be a beach blanket movie. It could be a drama. It could be a comedy. Or what interested me most was that they started showing the Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe horror movies, which were penned by Richard Matheson. So those are a real treat. So I would say probably the first horror movie I saw in a theater was House of Usher, which I believe came out in 1960. So that at the tender age of 7, I was already being traumatized by seeing, you know, the living dead or the people who are, you know, buried prematurely, or people who are going to be sliced in two as they were in Hitting the Pendulum, which came out in 1961. So it was just part of like the idea of every weekend we had a tiny little 2-hour, 3-hour banquet to enjoy, but we would never know one week from another what it would be. But of course, for me, I was immediately enraptured by the horror films, mostly because my two older sisters were scared by them. And I said, aha, here's the key to my power. I'm going to watch something and enjoy something that my two older sisters are afraid to see. So that was part of the, it wasn't so much forbidden fruit, is that there was fruit sitting there that no one else wanted to touch. And I said, I'll touch it. I'll eat it. Don't worry about it.
That's great. A drive-in? Did you go see movies at a drive-in?
We went to the drive-in. My father was a movie buff, and we went, again, every Friday night, we would go to the drive-in theater, which was like less than 3 miles from my parents' home. And again, no matter what it was, a war movie or a comedy or horror movies, my parents didn't care. It was their idea of, they had three children. Why bother, you know, with having the babysitter? We always had a station wagon, and they would put the three of us in the back, pack a picnic lunch, for lack of a better term, and we would all go to the movies. And there was a time before I had my license where I was already hooked on horror films to the extent that I needed to have someone to drive me there. So I would pay my father to take me to the drive-in so we could sit there and watch the drive-in horror movies by ourselves.
I wonder if you're the only kid who ever paid your parents to take you to the movies.
I don't know. It certainly worked for Barbarella, which was a great tender memory of mine, that my father, we went to the Calvin Theater, the Barbarella, which is rated M for mature, and that's certainly the last thing I was M for mature. But my father enjoyed it. It was ostensibly a science fiction film, and I got to, you know, see Jane Fonda on the screen in all her glory. So I think it was a win-win situation back in 68, 69. I'm not sure, but around that time.
We'll be back with more of our interview with Stanley Wiata right after this.
The Kindle Chronicles is a Friday audio podcast all about the Amazon Kindle e-reader. I'm Len Edgerly, and each week I present Kindle news, tech tips, an interview, a quote, and listener comments. I've been a writer all my life, and I'm doing this podcast because the Kindle has simply renewed my love of reading. I hope you'll stop by for a listen. You can find me at thekindlechronicles.com or by searching for Kindle in the podcast area of the iTunes store.
Obviously, as you've explained, you grew up in Western Massachusetts, which is, as I know, you know, pretty rural area. So you grew up this kind of rural area of Massachusetts, becoming fascinated with both horror novels and horror literature, short stories. As you mentioned earlier, Edgar Allan Poe, H.P. Lovecraft, and then, you know, developing a strong interest in horror movies and developing a knowledge of all of the actors. And as you mentioned earlier, is it Famous Monsters of Filmland?
Yes, that's
what I thought. So I'm just curious, you know, as we talked about earlier, you ended up becoming kind of this preeminent journalist and scholar regarding horror literature and horror movies. And I wonder, what was your journey like from this kid growing up in Western Massachusetts? And, you know, as I should remind people who are listening to this podcast who may not be, you know, who may be younger. I mean, this was, you know, well before there was a World Wide Web where you could find people of you know, your similar interest. You know, I'm just wondering how you got from where you started and your interest in horror and becoming the person that you did.
Well, it was easy and difficult at the same time. You mentioned about this is pre the World Wide Web. This is, you know, back in the 60s, it was pretty much everything in terms of getting your hands on knowledge about these subjects. I mean, there was no place that you could go to study comic books, study horror films, study horror literature. I mean, there really wasn't the lexicon to say, well, what are you writing about? Well, I'm writing about the horror genre. And people would say, what's a horror genre? I mean, it really didn't exist pre-Stephen King. And that would take people way back to say, yes, there was actually writers and movies before Stephen King came on the scene. But for me, it was the fact that I wanted to be a writer. And I did eventually sell short stories to various anthologies. But the idea was that I loved horror so much that I would track down on my own anything that was horror. And as I was growing up through high school, I was still going to drive-ins, this time on dates, of course, but I would pretend to be interested in my date. But what I was really interested in was seeing the new Roger Corman film or the new Hammer horror film, things of that nature. But when I got into college, eventually, in 1971, I went to the University of Massachusetts, and I was able to get into a special program, which was basically where you made up your own major. If you couldn't really fit into a slot at the college, they would allow you, if you could prove yourself to a committee of three, that you had a better major than what the school had to offer, you got into it. And I suggested that I have a major of cinema and writing so that I would be, in a sense, studying the film genre. And, of course, if I'm studying the film genre, I'm going to study horror films. So in a way, my education was predicated on me living out my fantasies, which was reading, writing, and studying horror films and horror literature. So that was the start of it. And then in my junior year, I had a scholarship that I won. I was one of five people to go to Warner Brothers as an intern. So for the summer of 1974, I went out there and studied the film industry. And for me, studying meant interviewing as many people as I could. And the first person I interviewed when I got there was Ray Bradbury, my all-time hero. So I started my career with what I consider the master and just continued on from there.
That's a great way to start.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's when I was 12 years old and discovered his book, Artist for Rocket, in the magazine shop. And I read Sound of Thunder, and I read The Foghorn. Both of them were dinosaur stories. I just said, oh my God, this is the genre of writing before I even knew what a genre of writing was. This was the literature that I set out forever be enamored of. And it's still the case.
And given, you know, that you started interviewing Ray Bradbury and, you know, as you've explained previously, you know, developing this kind of lifelong interest in horror literature, I'm just curious if you, you know, have any personal favorites that you kind of go back to and who those would be.
Well, it goes back to the masters. And again, this is not slighting Stephen King in any way, but basically people equate horror with Stephen King and vice versa. And I tell people there's so much more, and Stephen King will be the first to agree because he wrote an entire book called Das Macabre, which is about every other horror writer and horror filmmaker on the planet besides Stephen King. So for me, it still goes back to H.P. Lovecraft and Robert E. Howard and Clark Ashton Smith. And these writers were best known for their work in a pulp magazine called Weird Tales back in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. So these people for me, like Edgar Allan Poe, were my favorite writers of my childhood. So I go back to them as favorites. And of course, Ray Bradbury, I still buy every book that he writes because he was the man who most inspired me to go out and say, my God, there is something, you know, more than this one horse town called Hadley. And I don't have to live here forever. If I can be successful as a writer, I'll be able to get out of this town and explore my imagination without any boundaries.
Right. And you did mention Stephen King, and I know from following your career and reading your various interviews that you did interview Stephen King at a pretty early time in his kind of ascendancy. And I guess that would be, what time was that, like late 70s or early 80s?
That was the late 70s. It would be like, I'd have to check, but I'm pretty sure it would be like 78 or 79 would be the time of my first interview with him.
And do you remember when you first heard or read about him or read his work? And then I wondered if you could just talk about how that, you know, initial interview in the late 70s came about.
Yeah, I'd heard about him and actually had read a couple novels. When I met him, I believed he had just published The Dead Zone. And I had already read Carrie, Phelan's Lot, and The Stand, basically because I had been, it had been recommended to me by a close friend. So if this person liked it, I said, well, I'll probably like it. And I did. I mean, anyone who's read King, especially the earlier novels, you know, they move like lightning. And, they're incredibly entertaining reads and frightening and everything else that you would hope for in a horror novel. So when I met King, which was at a world fantasy convention, I had already read three of his books. And so when I sat down to do an interview with him, I was already armed with that knowledge of not being some reporter, even though I was there as a reporter. I was there as someone who wanted to logically discuss the horror field with him. But at the same time, I'd already written the first three novels he published. And I've done that throughout my career of when I interview someone, I do my utmost to read everything they've written or a lot of what they've written and written that they've done a lot of interviews. I try to read their interviews so that I can come there and not only be a fan of their work, which I've never denied being that, but also be someone who can meet them on an intellectual basis and say, yes, I know what I'm talking about, Mr. King, because I've read your first three books.
Gotcha.
And people appreciate that.
Gotcha. And where did that interview take place? You said the World Fantasy Convention. Where was that?
I believe that was in New Haven, Connecticut.
Gotcha.
It's either New Haven, Connecticut or Providence, Rhode Island. Trust me, it's been held in both cities.
Sure. And I'm wondering, I mean, talking about the various interviews that you've done over the years, was there any authors or filmmakers that you would have liked to interview for Dark Dreamers, your television show, that you didn't have a chance to?
Yes, it was quite a long list, and I'm hoping to take the show back into production at some point next year. But some of the people who said yes that we didn't get to include Ray Bradbury, R.L. Stine, Rick Baker, John Carpenter, Robert Englund, who played Freddy in the Nightmare on Elm Street movie. So, you know, Dean Koontz, all these folks have been kind enough to say yes, and just for various reasons of time and circumstance, they weren't included in the first two seasons. We have some material that's unedited, like with Stuart Gordon and with Mick Garris, that I hope to put out next year as well as part of that chapter two or volume two of Dark Dreamers.
And so you mentioned, obviously, the DVD pending release in January of 09, and you also just mentioned that you would like to try to get it back into production. Is that what you're going to try to work on doing?
Yes. I mean, it's simple as this. If the DVD is successful and the company, which is the largest distributor of DVDs in the company is 100% behind it. We feel that it's going to get good sales and good reviews. Then they'll back me to go back on the road. You can imagine this is, you know, as inexpensive a trip as you could imagine, because you only need yourself and a sound man and a cameraman to go to the person's home and do the interview. And that's the key thing with Dark Dreamers, is that we go to the person's home or their office so that they're in their comfort zone and they feel most comfortable, I think, with revealing, you know, their innermost fears and desires and talents that they have to present to us.
Right. If I'm not mistaken, unfortunately, some of the people that you have interviewed for Dark Dreamers have subsequently passed away or died, you know, unfortunately, such as Richard Lehman, and also I think the makeup artist, I'm trying to remember.
Dan Winston.
Right.
Dan Winston, yeah. He died in his late 50s, I believe it was a heart attack, and Richard Lehman died of a heart attack. And Joseph Stefano, best known for creating The Outer Limits, he died a few years ago as well.
Right.
So, yeah, and in a strange way, I'm hoping this show, Dark Dreamers, will be a memorial to these three gentlemen, because Richard Lehman, that was his first and only television interview. Dan Winston, I like to think we discussed things with him that he discussed with no one else. And Joseph Stefano, I believe that was his only feature interview, for lack of a better phrase.
Sure. So if people are listening and you know, are fans of Richard Lehman or Stan Winston or Joe Stefano, you may want to keep that in mind. Again, the Dark Dreamers DVD set will be available in January of 2009, and you should definitely check those out. I wonder too, Stanley, I know you co-authored the Brian Lumley Companion, the Richard Matheson Companion, and the Stephen King Universe, which were all kind of compendium volumes about the respective authors and their work. I wonder if you have any other, you know, companion volumes in the works at this point.
Not at this point. There's always a chance I would do something on Harlan Ellison. I'm a major fan of him and his work. But I keep hearing stories that from various writers that there are or is, you know, a Harlan Ellison type companion in the works. So considering how prolific he's been, and he's done a couple thousand publications in his career. I'm a huge fan of him and his work, but I keep hearing rumors that other writers are working on just such a companion, so I'm quite happy to let them tackle the climbing that mountain.
I wonder, as we, you know, reach the end of this interview, if you could, you know, let us know what you're working on now and kind of what's on the horizon for you.
Okay, thank you. Right now I'm doing original screenplays, which I've been doing throughout my career, but it appears that my first produced screenplay will be made this winter or early next year, called Whiteout. And that's a story of a family trapped in a cabin, and they're visited by aliens from a crashed UFO. So it's what I call straw dogs meet aliens. So I'm hoping that will go into production. And if it does, I've already been told that I'd be welcome on the set and to come up and register my opinion, yay or nay, as the production goes into full force. So that's the larger appeal. The other book that's coming out also in January is called The Twilight and Other Zones, The Dark Worlds of Richard Matheson. And that's the new revised version of the Richard Matheson Companion that came out this past April. This is the trade paperback edition that'll be coming out in January. That's also coming out in January from Citadel Press.
Citadel Press. Great. Thanks a lot for taking the time to talk to us for this inaugural episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. And again, we've been speaking with Stanley Wee Otter, the noted horror scholar and journalist who's been chronicling the horror genre in print and in film for many years now. And check out his Dark Dreamers DVD set, which will be available in January 2009. Thanks, Stanley.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks for joining us for the first episode of the Reading and Writing Podcast. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to our feed in iTunes and stay tuned for more interviews with writers that you enjoy reading. And until next time, keep reading.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.